Michigan's colleges and universities are plotting their courses for fall semester. The list of things needing attention is long, from student housing to campus athletics to, oh yes, what teaching will actually look and sound like this season. And the sands are shifting. University of Michigan President Mark Schlissel acknowledged today that COVID-19 is spreading more widely than was the case at the time when the school made its initial plans. He announced some measures like mandatory COVID tests on arrival at the dorms and 2 weeks of aggressive physical distancing for students before that arrival. We heard from Michigan State President Samuel Stanley also that the school will be open, but he's now urging students to take classes from home if they can. With so much in play, we wanted to talk to someone who's been at the center of figuring out how collegiate instruction is actually going to work this fall. Elizabeth Burr-Moji is dean of the University of Michigan School of Education. She's been leading the school's coordinating committee on instructional planning. Elizabeth Burr-Moji, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me, April. It's great to be here.
Listen, I know this is an East Lansing matter, but as I just mentioned, MSU has said that students should stay home even though campus will be open. The thing that's interesting about this is there's an implication that while any university can have a system of rules, that there will be moments in which free will has a part to play in how everyone behaves, students, but maybe also faculty and staff. Where do you see an intersection between rules that a school might devise and the things that people actually end up doing?
Well, that's a small question, April. thanks for asking it. This is, of course, the big challenge that we all face. Anyone who is thinking about re-engaging, whether it's at a university, in a K-12 setting, or in businesses, there is the space between what we advise in terms of safety and interaction and what people will actually do. There will always be that space. And what we're doing at the University of Michigan is trying to be very clear about the different kinds of safety precautions, the public health informed activity that we're going to engage in, providing the kinds of personal protective equipment that will help people participate in a public health informed semester or year, as the case may be. And we're also really trying to constantly remind people, and reminding our students and our faculty and staff members, that we all want to be together. We know that we're better together. And so to be together, we have to participate in these ways.
We know that there will be a switch to more virtual curriculum. But what are some of the other big changes on your mind for campus this fall?
Well, it's going to be both exciting and challenging, because we are going to have multiple kinds of instruction. So we landed on a recommendation to have three different types of instruction, which are actually more complicated than simply saying three different types. So we'll have remote instruction, and that is really for people who cannot be on campus for all sorts of reasons, whether that's, you know, health related or travel related or, you know, other kinds of issues that might prevent someone from being physically present. We'll have in-person instruction where we can, when it's safe. Those will be very small classes, but we'll really try to make the most of those. And I can say more about what those look like. We did some pilots to try to see what it would look like to be in person, but physically distanced. And then we'll have what we're calling hybrid, what sometimes people call high flex classes. And those are classes that actually allow students to participate both in person and remotely.
Right. So where there is discretion, who's making decisions about which classes will be online and which ones will be in person?
So every unit on campus worked with its faculty and graduate student instructors who would be teaching to determine their health needs, any needs for accommodation that they might have, and to then decide, who could be in person and who could be or who should be remote for their own safety and for the safety of others. Then what happened was that we went through the courses and examined which courses most needed to be taught in person. You know, anything from, let's say, dentistry, medicine, dance, you know, all of these kinds of courses really have to be in person in one way or another. So then once we had, information about what instructors felt they could do and what courses really needed pedagogically to really run well, then we looked at rooms and determined what room sizes we had available. So you can see this is a really intricate planning process, and it's taken really all summer for us to get to the place where now we've been able to designate courses, and those will be available, those designations will be available to students so that they can then make choices about whether they're going to be remote, in person, or hybrid.
This time has shed a lot of light on an area of education that I think most of us don't really know a lot about, and that's instructional design. Instructional designer's job is to sort of figure out what the learning experience is like, what works and what doesn't. And obviously some of them have had a lot to say about online instruction and what that might look like. You know, best practices for students and best practices for instructors. Do all the university's departments have instructional designers?
I can't actually answer that question definitively because I don't know, the details of every single department. It's obviously, a huge university.
I'm guessing the School of Education is pretty well staffed in that way.
Yes, we study learning and we study teaching. So we, I think, have done quite well. And we think a lot about what good pedagogy is, what good teaching is, what learners' needs are, how people learn. And we base our instruction on what we know from the research. And what I think is important to know is that we have two centers on our campus that serve the entire campus. So lots of units do have instructional designers. I do want to say that. I just can't say whether every single unit or every single department has its own instructional designer, but many do, especially our larger units. The College of Literature, Science, and the Arts has amazing people who have been working all summer to think about what's the course, what are the goals of the course, what kind of instruction would be best for those goals, what's the size of the class, all those things I described that were part of our decision-making process.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Elizabeth Burr-Moji, Dean of the University of Michigan School of Education. She's also been leading the conversation about instructional planning for the university's year. How would you describe what we're learning about instructional design right now?
Well, we're learning a great deal. Obviously, we're learning what makes in-person instruction so wonderful, so important. The interactions between and among human beings, the opportunity in real time to be able to exchange ideas and get feedback immediately. That has been heightened for us, revealed for us in ways that I think we took for granted in the past. We're learning about, remote instruction and the possibilities of, the multiple types of remote instruction, one being asynchronous. That's where a learner can do the work on their own time, being flexible for allowing people to take classes that fit into their schedules. They're challenging in other ways. They depend heavily on writing, which is somewhat challenging in the sense that they don't get immediate feedback. You don't get the dynamic interchange of ideas that you would have in an in-person discussion. But it has other possibilities. It allows people who might be more cautious about jumping into that dynamic exchange to have a voice. So we're seeing that some students who were more reticent, who were quieter, who, as I said, were cautious about putting their ideas out there, they're thriving in an asynchronous environment because they don't have to jump in and sort of I don't want to say compete, but they don't have to try to vie for airspace, and they can do the kind of thinking they need to do before they put their ideas forward, and they still get the feedback on the ideas. I'm seeing wonderful things. I was teaching in the winter term when, you know, everything changed. Mm-hmm. And I saw wonderful ways that my students were interacting with each other online that were so heartening. We hear negative things about, especially young people, you know, and the ways they interact in virtual environments. And I shouldn't say just young people, because lots of people don't interact positively in virtual environments. But I'll tell you, they were wonderful. They were gracious to each other. They acknowledged each other's ideas. They built on those ideas, but they also asked hard questions. And so that space, that asynchronous space, gives people maybe more, I don't know, more of an opportunity to be part of a brave space where they can challenge ideas and deeply learn.
Well, I'm sure that this is not the environment that instructional designers wanted for, you know, not the interesting moment that they'd hoped for, but perhaps a learning moment just the same. University of Michigan Provost Susan Collins said in July that tuition is going up for both undergrad and graduate programs, and room and board as well. We can't, you know, of course, we can't really ask you to shed any light on that decision, but at the same time, you're a leader within the university and you have a budget. Can you provide any context for what the financial pressures are like just from your perspective right now, and trying to do what you're doing with what you have and maybe less than you would have in a normal year?
Well, it is a challenging time for everyone, not just the university, of course. And we do have to think carefully about our resources and about how to use those resources well and to the benefit of our students. So, you know, we're really thinking about providing the kinds of resources that support instruction, that support our students if they don't have access to technology tools, that support all of us in figuring out how we can try to capture those moments where we can be together. So we're really thinking about a lot of our instructional resources, both human, so all the brilliant minds who can support instruction, and as you said, the learning design piece, but also the people in the room. You know, do we need to have more support for faculty members who are, or I should say all instructors who are managing multiple spaces? You know, in our test runs, we taught hybrid classes that were simultaneously synchronous and remote and in person. So we had people on Zoom and we had people in the classroom, and I was the test teacher. And I can tell you it was exhausting. Mm-hmm. It was also really energizing, but it was exhausting to have to manage all the different people in different spaces. And so I could imagine that we would want to be investing in instructional supports to the extent that we can, whether that's someone else in the room to help with that management, or, you know, the very best tools possible. So those are the kinds of investments that I think we're all really committed to in challenging times.
I wonder how you're thinking about the goalposts for instruction right now. We've heard a lot from educators in the K-12 sphere that they just feel like some things like standardized testing should very rightly not be considered a part of the school year this year, given what's happened over the last 6 months and given what may well happen through the winter and possibly into the spring as well. Do you think that students can expect that the university education that they get in 2020 and 2021 is going to be what we understand as a university education?
I think that the instruction will be superior. I think it will be absolutely top-notch. I think it's very possible to maintain the highest quality instruction that we can provide our students. So I think that actually, our commitment to instruction will be deepened, and I think we will build on the very best things we do. We will work hard to make up for the things that we can't do. So that's probably the biggest loss, I would say, and that is that dynamic in-person interaction. The student who follows you out of the classroom to ask one more question, the opportunities to engage in the hallways, to have different kinds of lectures and activities where we all come together. But the fact is, in my course I was teaching in the winter, I had a student ask if we could stay on for just a little bit. He had one more question, and an hour later, we concluded that conversation. So that was remote, but it still happened. We can bring speakers in. You know, I've already done a guest spot for a class at Harvard, and I can bring them in very quickly, very easily, with little expense. So I think there are ways to fill that in. Now, I don't want to suggest that we want to do this forever. We will be hungry for in-person interaction. I have no doubt of that. And ultimately, I do believe we are better together, but I think that we can provide the very best possible education, a true Michigan education, in these different environments, these different platforms. We just have to work harder to do it. And we're all going to have to pitch in and work together.
You know, we are just weeks from the restart. I wondered if some of the decisions and announcements we've heard over the past couple of days might be acknowledging that, you know, things are changing and can change even more. Do you think the restart is doable on the timeline that we have?
I think it's doable on the timeline that we have. I think that the virus is somewhat unpredictable. And as we talked about at the start, people's behavior can be unpredictable. And I don't know what the future holds in terms of the virus trajectory. If it peaks, then that could change everything. If a vaccine is developed, that could change things. Obviously, that is, I think, farther off. It's not going to happen immediately. But, you know, all of these things, the unpredictability of these occurrences is what makes this all so difficult.
Elizabeth Burr-Mogi is Dean of the University of Michigan School of Education, and she's also been deeply involved in the school's coordinating committee on how instruction will work this fall. Elizabeth, thank you so much for your time on this and for all your work.
Thank you, April. It's a pleasure to talk with you.